I noticed that on OpenAI, at least, the sources are kind of buried now. They don't put them up prominently enough. I think they mm-hmm. should say, you know, we collected this information from this website before they present the data. Honestly, I think everybody should block these tools.
Yeah.
And they should en masse sue these LLMs for a licensing fee. This is all good for the industry. The industry starts to start thinking about sustainability, not just doing what they're doing now, which is strip mining. The strip mining by LLMs is going to just destroy the environment, and then there'll be nothing left for everybody else. Stop taking the calcite from Gorbin, destroying the planet, or the Kyber crystals, you know. It's almost like overfishing. They're overfishing.
Yes.
They're going to take every piece of cod out of the ocean, and then they're going to wonder where the cod went. Just take 10% of the cod, you know? Like, you don't have to take 100%. And maybe, you know, leave whatever the cod eat, you know? Like, yeah. You got to be sustainable.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. A business is only as strong as its people, and every hire matters. Go to linkedin.com/twist to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Northwest Registered Agent. Starting your business should be simple. With Northwest Registered Agent, you can form your entire business identity in just 10 clicks in 10 minutes. From LLCs to trademarks, domains to custom websites, they've got you covered. Get more privacy, more options, and more done. Visit northwestregisteredagent.com/twist today. And Retool. Bridge the gap between AI demos and business impact with technology that's designed for developers and built for the enterprise. Visit retool.com/twist and start your free trial today.
All right, everybody, welcome back to This Week in Startups. I'm Jake Howe. He's Alex. Tons of news going on in big tech, tons of startup news. We'll try to thread the needle, get between those two things. What do we got today in the news? What's the top, like, give me the top two or three stories as you see them here on Friday, June 20th, as you can see if you're watching the YouTube channel or Spotify, I guess that's video too. I am in Los Angeles. My road trip continues.
How many airline miles do you have, Jason? Is it like 20 billion at this point
no,
in time?
No, you know, it's very simple. When you own a company, all the miles collect to you because you book all the tickets, right?
Ah.
So anybody who travels business for our company, you know, we centrally consolidate all those and then we get to use them. You know, I always found that airline thing was a bit of a scam. When I was on the other side of it, and I was an employee. I was like, yeah, give me the miles. And I was like, wait a second. This is incredible. They for business, they bribe the employees to buy higher level tickets to get more points.
Right.
And then it's working against the best interests of the company. It was very funny. I have spent too many cycles. I try not to do this, but too many cycles trying to figure out how their systems work. And I realized, oh, it's a video game. Miles, lounges, it's all a video game. Either you can play that game and it takes up hours of your life,
mm-hmm.
or I can read one more ad on a podcast or do 10 minutes of a speaking gig and make double that and never worry about it again. So now I just got the America's Worth Platinum card, the United cards, and I paid 100,000 miles just to have a family plan for the lounges. Because it is getting a little uncivilized out there in commercial travel. The crowds are... I mean, I guess the economy, you know, I keep hearing the economy and like, maybe it's slowing down or maybe people aren't flying as much domestically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy at these airports.
It's crazy in the airports. And what I'm kind of blown away by, and I don't want to look back at my younger years and say those were better because I you know, rose tinted glasses, Jason. But does it seem to you that flights just don't really leave on time anymore?
Never.
And they also are always oversold. And so I feel like every time I go to the airport, I'm like, all right, putting on my gladiatorial gear. And I just want to freaking get on the seat that I bought and not be harassed too much and maybe have a Coke. You know, like it's not
pretty
great.
Crazy. I mean, I guess we take it for granted in some ways that you can fly anywhere, anytime for a very reasonable price, which I think is the major success of this. But it does come at a price.
Yes.
If you keep lowering the cost and you keep working on that as a product strategy, and it does seem to be pretty competitive. You know, you would think there was less competition in airlines because of, you know, how expensive it is. I feel like I have three choices of carriers every time I fly somewhere in the United States. It's like, oh, Delta, Southwest, mm-hmm. JetBlue, United. I mean, it's like almost everybody fly American.
Here's what I want though, Jason. If you want to buy a car, you can buy a nice low cost Kia, super dependable. Mm-hmm. We'll get you where you want to go. Not flashy. Or you can go and get yourself a hand-painted Bentley. Yeah. Where's the Porsche Cayman middle ground of airlines? You know, like
the economy plus. Yeah, there should be something in the middle. You're right. I think who used to be that? I think JetBlue had a pretty good case to make there. Virgin America.
Virgin America.
That was it. Yeah. No, Virgin America was great.
It's so good.
Can't believe they sold that. Yeah. That's a bummer. All right. So what are the top stories in the news today? Let's get through the news and some startup news.
Yes, sir. So the number one story, I think, is that Meta's enormous AI push is now really impacting the startup world. Recall, Jason, that they are trying to build a new super intelligence team. Mm-hmm. This is where the scale AI quasi acquisition came into play. The latest story is that Safe Super Intelligence, which is the company that Ilya, I always forget how to pronounce his last name, Sutskever.
Yeah, I think we got it.
Yeah. That former OpenAI leader, Ilya Sutskever, founded with Daniel Gross. Safe Super Intelligence, or just SSI, raised, I believe, $3 billion and was recently valued at $32 billion. Now, Meta wanted to buy it outright. And reporting says that, you know, Ilya said, no, thank you. I'm not interested in that. And so what Meta is doing is probably, it is working on taking the other co-founder, Daniel Gross, and also his investing partner, Nat Friedman, the former GitHub CEO, in kind of a package deal, while also taking a stake in those two gentlemen's venture capital fund. So probably a pretty big investment here from Meta, once again underscoring how much money they're willing to put to work. I'm just getting a little perplexed, Jason, at these weird AI deals and why every single one of them seems to be multi-part and complex. And I'm trying to figure out why, I guess.
Yeah, there's a very simple why behind this. If you go pull up the Facebook market cap and the and their cash hoard, just generally speaking, broad numbers, and then you put it against the prize for winning the AI race, artificial general intelligence, super intelligence, superhuman intelligence. People are using different words for this. We had a little debate about it on All In, which will come out, I think, the same time you'll be listening to this.
Okay.
It's a big prize. It'll affect many, many different industries. White collar, blue collar. We've talked about this. You know, you got self-driving cars and robots in factories like Amazon. Basically, every industry is going to be impacted by this. So whoever wins, gets there first, or becomes one of the top three players, is going to take part in a $10 trillion prize, let's say. And you have a market cap like Zuckerberg does of...
So it's $1.72 trillion.
Okay, $1.7 trillion, yeah.
In the last quarter, Meta's operating cash flow, Jason, was $24.0 billion, and its free cash flow was $10.3 billion. And the company's current cash, cash equivalents, and marketable securities was $70.2 billion as of March 31st.
Okay, so you got $70 billion laying around. You pay a dividend, right? I believe that's the dividend-paying company now.
Yep.
And you've got a giant market cap. The market cap of this prize, if it's $10 trillion, has the ability to double or triple your market cap. If you were to win but 25% of it, you know, win $2.5 trillion in market cap easily, added, right? So even if you got the, let's say gold gets 50% of the market share and silver gets 25% and bronze gets 15% and everybody else shares the rest or whatever, some distribution there, which we see in other industries.
Absolutely.
You might see a similar thing with smartphones, right? Two players, a duopoly, and then a long tail of like weird phone companies at the end. What would it make sense if you had a bet in poker and the implied odds were you could triple your market cap and secure your legacy? You know, how much would you be willing to gamble? How much would you be willing to risk is the question. I think he would be willing to risk easily 20%, 10, 20% would not even be a scratch, right? It's just like a bruise. It's not a big deal if you lost 10 or 20%. It's like Elon losing a rocket the other day. It's like, oh, that's a little,
oh man,
that's a little stingy, you know, like, oh, ouch, you know, it stings, but it's not like SpaceX is going anywhere. They're launching two or three rockets a week of the other ones, but.
No, but every time Starship doesn't crush it, Jason, it sets back the Alex gets to space date ever so slightly. And every
you're
day-
You're getting there.
I'm getting old, man. Like I need-
No.
I really want Starship to work.
So yeah, that's what this comes down to. On a personal basis, he's willing to risk 20% of his legacy. That's $350 billion in market cap, 20% of their cash on hand, you know, and cash flow coming in. They could basically just say to the shareholders, we're not going to post a profit anymore. We're not going to do a dividend. Uh-huh. And we're going to be buying and investing in artificial intelligence like nobody's business. And well, yeah, we'll still do the Meta Glasses thing, but that's going to be, you know, they're going to have to make it work with 10% of their budget. They can just make slow incremental progress. We're going for this prize now.
All right. We all know if you're a founder, or even if you're a small business, you're thinking about your company 24/7, 365 days a year. That's the life of a founder. This is not clock in, clock out, 9-to-5 gig for you as the business owner. So when you're hiring, you want a partner that's as equally as committed as you are. And that's, of course, LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs is like your co-founder. They're going to make it so simple for you to post your jobs for free on LinkedIn, where there are 1 billion members. You're going to be able to share what you're posting and actually keep all the promising candidates organized in one place. And also, LinkedIn is going to help you quickly write a job and get it in front of the right people, whether you want to post for free or use some promotion to get it in front of even more qualified applicants. So do me a favor. Don't take my word for it. I mean, you should. I know what I'm talking about. This is where I find my great people. But just understand that 72% of small businesses using LinkedIn said that it helped them find the best candidates. So find out why more than 2.5 million small businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring. So here's your call to action. Post your job for free. Why wouldn't you do it? It's free. F-R-E-E. That's a good price. LinkedIn.com/TWIST. Once again, that's LinkedIn.com/TWIST to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply.
So here's a fun question. How much money did Meta spend in Q1 on dividend payments? Well, it turns out the answer, actually, do you want to guess or do you just want the answer?
Oh, well, let's think about it. I don't know.
Let me get you a yield number.
I'm going to just say 10 billion.
It was only 1.3 billion in the quarter, but they also rebought $13.4 billion worth of their shares.
Ah.
I think we forget occasionally how much money the Mag 7 make, because I'm like, oh, you know, yeah, a billion here, but it really adds up. It turns out, nah, not so much. I mean, their free cash flow is like $3 billion a month.
The way you look at this is the same bet OpenAI made on Johnny Ive.
Yep.
So Sam Altman's out there like, I can't believe they're offering $100 billion to an employee of mine. He's clutching his pearls. Did you see that whole thing? And like,
oh my God,
this is terrible.
Yeah.
And it turns out he gave $6.5 billion to like Johnny Ive.
For part-time work.
Yeah, it's like Johnny Ive. I think probably Johnny Ive owns, you know, some significant percentage of that company. It was his company. So if he owns at least half of it or two thirds of it, of that $6.5 billion, you got $4 billion. So you paid $4 billion for one employee. And you're complaining about somebody getting $100 million signing bonus when you just gave somebody 50 times that or 60 times that?
Yeah.
When this many smart people believe the prize is imminent and the prize is big, you get to see some unnatural things occur. And that's what we're saying.
I think that's totally valid. Now, a question for you is, when is it too early to sell? Because Safe Super Intelligence, Ilya's company, is incredibly young. There's no product on the market yet. They haven't really even shown off much of what they're building. We know it's AI and probably super intelligence with extra safety controls. I mean, just given the name. But Jason, you know, why wouldn't you take such an enormous potential check from Meta?
He's post money. He's got enough equity in OpenAI that, again, when you're talking about individuals and individual behavior, it has to do, often in the early part of people's careers, you see this anxious, grinding, desperately trying to get to money, and people seem like they are just aggressive lunatics doing cutthroat things. Then later in your career, you have money in the bank, you realize you're not spending it, you realize the cheeseburger tastes the same if it's a $10 really good In-N-Out burger, a $50 one with a little Wagyu in it, or like I had one time like a $100 burger in New York. There was like this craze black truffles on it for like, and you know, whatever. You know, I sat there and I was with a couple of people and one or two of them were billionaires and stuff like that. And I realized, this is pretty interesting. A DoorDash driver could work 5 hours and enjoy the same $100 hamburger as the billionaires and everybody in between. Mm-hmm. So once you get to that level, you start to understand non-economic reasons to do things in life. None of those billions matter. Nothing after like the first 10 or 20 or $30 million actually matters, to be totally honest. So here we are. That's why it's making a non-economic decision. The economic decision would be to take those chips immediately.
Yeah.
And if he didn't have the OpenAI shares and whatever else he earned in his career, I bet you he would.
I was trying to figure out what is the dollar value of independence, but I think that's actually the wrong question to ask here. The real question is, are you willing to once again go work for someone else instead of yourself if you don't have to? And the answer just appears to be no. Also, producer Lon pulled up. That was called the Money's No Object Burger, we think, Jason.
Oh.
So it was Wagyu. It was Grade A Hudson foie gras, an onion marmalade made with a port, and then also a quarter inch of freshly shaved Italian white truffles. That doesn't actually sound that good.
It's a train wreck. Too much going on.
Yeah.
Way too much.
Actually, you know what? An In-N-Out burger is like one of the finest pieces of food. In-N-Out
is incredible, yeah. I have like, there's so many run-ins with the tech industry and In-N-Out. Like Postmates put In-N-Out burger, I think DoorDash did it, without permission.
And then they got in trouble.
They got in trouble for that. They are making it happen in Dallas. We talked about it before in a previous episode. There are lots of 8-pound deliveries occurring right now.
Yeah.
I'm more convinced than ever that DoorDash drivers are going away. That entry-level rung job is going to be done by these little four-wheel R2D2s, the Coco and...
Serve robotics.
Those things are working. I think they're largely flawless. And if one of them gets knocked out, who cares? They are remote operated. There's teleoperation going on there, but soon it won't be. The drone delivery seemed farcical, and now it feels inevitable to me.
One last thing on the Jason before we go on. I just looked it up. Shake Shack stock price, $132 a share, went public at 21.
Oh, okay. So they're doing good.
Yeah, they're doing fantastically. Yeah. So
I wonder what the price earning is on that. I wonder if like, how do you value, I wonder if it's a meme stock or if it's like a legit just being valued like any other fast food chain. I don't cover that sector, obviously, so I have no idea. And this also seems to be a very big trend with these. I wonder if it is built to last or if it's, you know, like the Korean yogurt phase of Red Mango and all those that swept California. I don't know if you remember that. Everybody had to go out for yogurt,
yes,
you know, and get these like tangy yogurts, and then it just went away.
Turns out it's 3 to 4x price sales, just as a data point. All right, moving on. I want to talk about Midjourney. This is a company that, Jason, I had not actually put on the Twist 500 because they've effectively not raised any known capital. And so they were a little bit outside of the domain of the Twist 500. But after what they announced today and a couple of other reasons, I am going to put them on. I'll explain that later. The news here is that Midjourney, which is famous for its image generating tools, has finally moved into the video space. And for a company that has reportedly reached 9 figures of revenue and has quite a lot of market reach, it's kind of a big moment for the company. So I took the liberty of grabbing an image of you. And I'm going to go ahead and show everyone this. A Jason-approved image of himself. I believe this is from the All-In show. And then if you take that image and give it to the new model.
Wow.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, Jason, this is actually a 5-second clip because it does it in 5-second chunks now, but it automatically made me 4 different versions. And so I just went ahead and picked the one that I thought made you look the least creepy because it doesn't quite get the mouth right. If you watch, it's a little too static. But this is prompt free. I literally just gave it this image and V1, their new video model, made this and a number of other things. Very impressive.
Well, this is super impressive when you compare it to like The Irishman, Netflix did, you know, the Scorsese film, where they de-aged folks. And I heard a story about that one where they wanted to use this de-aging technology, but it would have required them to put like the ping pong balls and, you know, on De Niro's face
Like
Al Pacino's face. And they're like, yeah, well, not doing it. It's not for us, you know, and they refused to do it. But then the Netflix team, you know, was told they're 18 months away from like the deepfake thing working. And so they shot it with that technology and they said they'll get it done in post. And it was okay, but a lot of people complained about it. Then there was Luke Skywalker in The Mandalorian. They de-aged at this point, you know, if you didn't see it, it's okay. No more spoiler alerts, but they de-aged Luke Skywalker. Mark Hamill's obviously pretty old. That one didn't quite cross the uncanny valley. This is better than both of those.
I want to show one more example because this is the first one that really sold me on this before I went ahead and made one of you, Jason. This is from a prompt that a user had done over on the Midjourney service. And the prompt was, just reading it for everybody, a portrait of a woman in the grass with sunset lighting. Her long hair is blowing in the wind and the red colored light is shining on it against a dark blue background. This is a hyper-realistic photograph with a cinematic feel. And as you can see on my screen, there is that image. And then you click play because it turned it into a 5-second clip. Watch this. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, indistinguishable from the real life if you were scrolling. I mean, if I told you, like, we're doing a test right now, you have to pick the AI one, you might pick it. Like, if you really studied it, you can look for little clues and stuff like that. But yeah, it crosses the uncanny valley as defined by me, as if it was scrolling in your feed, you wouldn't be able to tell.
Investors like me are not going to invest in your business unless you're structured properly. So founders, if you're serious about raising money, you need to set up your business the right way. And that starts with a registered agent. Before a venture capitalist can wire you a single dollar, they're going to check if your company is incorporated and it's in good standing and it's compliant. That's where Northwest Registered Agent comes in. For just $39 plus state fees, they're going to handle your paperwork, keep you compliant, and make sure investors see you as a serious business concern that's worth putting money into. In just 10 clicks and 10 minutes, your business is officially investor ready. Thousands of founders trust Northwest, so don't let paperwork cost you your next funding round. Go to northwestregisteredagent.com/twist and get your business investor ready today. For just $39 plus state fees, you can set up your company the right way, fast, private, and compliant. Go to northwestregisteredagent.com/twist today.
All right. Next up is a bit of news from a group of Twist 500 companies, Jason. My favorite, I think, cohort of companies, talked about them a lot on the show, Created by Humans, one of your investments, Tollbit, and Human Native. The latest news here that I'm really interested
in. Explain what those are. That little, since most people are, it's a new category. Yeah.
Yeah. So these are companies, startups, that want to create a marketplace that connects IP holders, people who own a podcast like Jason or a blog like me, and have content that AI companies may want to train or otherwise access, and essentially creates a marketplace where they can reach commercial terms for that. The problem that websites are facing is getting worse. People are scraping more and they're sending fewer people back, and the ratios keep getting more and more out of whack. So the news here, apart from just the overall situation getting worse, is that Cloudflare is building a tool that is going to, they claim, really wall off unwanted AI scraping. And if this tool works as well as Matthew Prince, the CEO of Cloudflare, kind of says that it's going to, he joked that he's taking on North Koreans every day. He can surely take on some C Corp based out of Palo Alto. Then it could overnight change the math on AI usage, because people do a lot of AI searches, and that involves a lot of AI bots going out and scraping data. So I'm encouraged by this as a person who writes on the internet. I'm also kind of thinking this is going to be a huge boon to companies like Tollbit, because suddenly if they have no access to stuff, people are going to have to go out and pay for it.
Well, I'm an investor in one of these created by humans, and I think it's great that there'll be a market for content on the web and allowing people to do the right thing. And I think the lawsuits are going to keep piling up. I know that people use RAG and all these things. They search websites. You know, when you do an OpenAI search now, it almost by default goes out to the open web and then creates your response. So I think the reason they're doing that is the legal reason. I noticed that on OpenAI, at least, the sources are kind of buried now. They don't put them up prominently enough. I think they should say, you know, we collected this information from this website before they present the data. I think the content companies on the web should start forcing them to change how this stuff is presented to increase the clickbacks to their website. And then they could make a Google-like arrangement, which is, you know, you search, people search, we send you traffic, it should be okay with you. But honestly, I think everybody should block these tools and they should en masse sue these LLMs for a licensing fee. You know, if you're doing it professionally for a business, and if you're doing a blog and you don't care if it's your personal blog, or you're doing cautious optimism and you think, well, I don't care, like, just put me in there. I want to be represented. And, you know, those people are never going to pay $100 a year for a Substack. So who cares? This is all good for the industry. The industry needs to start thinking about sustainability, not just doing what they're doing now, which is strip mining. The strip mining by LLMs is going to just destroy the environment, and then there'll be nothing left for everybody else. Stop taking the calcite from Gorbin, destroying the planet, or the Kyber crystals. You know, if you succeed in stripping all this stuff, you're just going to be nothing left. It's almost like overfishing. They're overfishing.
Yes.
They're going to take every piece of cod out of the ocean, and then they're going to wonder where the cod went. Just take 10% of the cod. You know, like you don't have to take 100%. And maybe, you know, leave whatever the cod eat, you know, like yeah. You gotta be sustainable. I think I said enough here. Yeah.
So I also asked Created by Humans what they think is the best way to go about creating a more equitable marketplace. And they said something that kind of surprised me a little bit. They wrote, I'm just going to quote here. We recommend evolving the robots.txt protocol into an AI-robots.txt standard so that websites can specify what's available and what's not with a few lines of code. This could free up most of the web for training without a license while ensuring that commercial or paywalled works are clearly marked as opt-in only and accessible through licenses. So I think that's great. Very generous, but I feel like people still just go around it and say that it's RAG and it's fair use. And I think they need to be meaner is my take.
You know, so there's two ways you can do things, you know, as an industry. You can be regulated, or you can use the legal system, or you can create your own systems. So really, there's three ways. A lawsuit can happen that you produced a movie and my underage kid went to it and they were traumatized by it and they saw The Exorcist and now I had to send them to therapy. I wonder if that happened. So the movie industry would then have to deal with a lawsuit and hiring lawyers. Then you could be regulated by the industry, by the government. The government could say, you know, you guys are out of control. We're going to regulate you. Now you got to go to a censor. We got this like group in Washington that's going to check your work and, you know, we'll do it for you. Or you can do what they did quite sensibly, create the MPAA, where they gave a bunch of money to an organization that they created. And then when parents came to them and complained, they said, well, we have the MPAA. Would you please go visit their office or, you know, they'll do a call with you and explain the strategy. And they're responsible and they are the arbiter of what gets PG versus PG-13. And you can take your complaint to them and the government could go call that group, right? That's what the industry needs here. And the industry should do it or else it's going to be endless lawsuits. And then there'll be lawsuits from consumers and then the government will eventually step in. And the great news here is we just talked about how much money is in AI. I think that the first firm to do a deal with Disney to create characters, you know, for image generation and to create short stories for it and have an exclusive in it is going to get 10% more users. Go to Disney, say, we want to make the ability for you to Jedi yourself, right? You can go make a Jedi lightsaber. We want you to Jedi yourself and pay and you, or you can make yourself a Marvel character.
Sure.
So you say Marvel me and it makes Alex and Jason into Marvel characters and we can put ourselves as Iron Man or, and we can make a short video of ourselves in the Iron Man outfit, press the button, the face mask opens and boom, it's your face. Whoever does that first, whether it's XAI, Claude, Midjourney, pick the company, OpenAI, whoever has the wisdom to do that, some cynics might say, open up the can of worms, just make a 10-year deal. And then anytime anybody else does it, then OpenAI could sue Claude or Claude could sue OpenAI or Google Gemini could sue whoever, or some new entrant, you know, Ilya's company could say, hey, we're doing it. We got the license. Now you're infringing on our ability to do commerce and Disney. So now you got two people who are upset. That's what happens, you know, when you start going above board and you create standards. Those commercial relationships will then create consensus and voting blocks legally, and the industry can work it out themselves. So I really hope that people do this. And you would make a thoughtful decision with cautious optimism, sorry.
I mean, I just like money. So sure. If someone came to me with a check, I'd be like, thank you. Much like
what if five of them, I mean, if you said, hey, you can ingest all of this and every time you read the page is $10. Each of my articles is $10 to have in your LLM for all time. And there's 20 LLMs that pay you $10 each. You get $200 in incremental revenue per piece you write. By the way, that's what a piece gets paid in today's world. If you're Zuckerberg and give $100 million to a developer to join your firm, you can start giving $1 million each or $100,000 each to 1,000 different, you know, writers. So pick your favorite 1,000 writers. Now, will Zuckerberg ever do that? No, unless he gets sued. And that's really what has to happen. Substack needs to sue Zuckerberg and say, you ingested the stuff. It's clear you ingested it. And Substack plus the writers should be going to Created by Humans. And now you've got the writer, the platform, Substack, and Created by Humans all going to Zuckerberg and saying, hey, here's 2,000 writers that you ingested. Here's Substack, which makes a is in partnership with them. And by the way, we're in partnership with them.
Yeah.
So FYPM. Frack, you pay me.
Me.
AI is changing every aspect of the way we do business. We all know that. But lots of people, well, they're not getting enough out of it. That's my belief. Your AI apps need to connect to your other processes, your other systems, all that data you got sitting there. And you can do that with this incredible new tool called Retool, R-E-T-O-O-L. Now you can quickly create AI agents that will help you get work done, like real work done, and solve real work problems inside of your organization. Imagine you join a Zoom. After you had a dedicated AI assistant prep your meeting notes, then it sticks around to give you all the important real-time context and feedback that your colleagues are talking about. So now you're going to be able to design really sophisticated user interfaces, agents, and processes without sacrificing performance or customization. Retool is trusted by over 10,000 companies, including our pals over at Ramp. So check out Retool today and get your AI on, doing more than just talking. Go to retool.com/twist to learn more. That's retool.com/twist.
The BBC is threatening to sue Perplexity. BBC is a British broadcasting corporation, and Perplexity, of course, is the very well-known AI search startup. Jason, we talked about how it crossed $100 million in ARR earlier this year. Hundreds of millions of searches done each month, and the BBC is like, hey, stop taking our stuff, delete what you have, and offer us some money. And Perplexity is saying that the BBC's claims are manipulative and opportunistic, and that they, quote, have a fundamental misunderstanding of technology, the internet, and intellectual property law. The other thing here from the FT is that apparently the BBC is in talks with other AI companies, including Amazon. So my read here is that everyone else is going to pay. Perplexity didn't want to, and so they're going to get sued. But I think that's a mistake. I think they should have just paid.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are on the content side. Yeah. It's fairly obvious, you know, if it's just the headline of the story and you're sending traffic, yeah, then Perplexity, then, you know, FT and BBC and everybody else would have a different position. When you ingest it, put it into your learning, you know, you summarize it. If it's maybe behind a paywall, that creates another issue. So FT is behind a paywall.
So here's the thing, though. What if your competitors aren't acting ethically and you want to? So for founders, let's say that their competitor is just scraping everyone's information without doing proper compensation. Where should you draw the line on, like, maintaining your ethics, Jason, but also not getting run out of town by a competitor who might have a more fast and loose approach to, say, fair use?
Oh, well, what happens is these competitors all will then go to those content providers and stir the pot. It's kind of like immigration. Here we go. The people who are most pissed off about an open border are the people who came in and waited in line.
Yes.
Which makes total sense. If you waited in line for your hamburger and somebody cut the line, you're like, that's effed up. I don't care if I've already finished my, if I finished my hamburger 5 years ago and you cut, I see you cutting the hamburger line, I'm not happy. And I think that's what you see here is like the fairness thing. And this is all, you know, when you talk about fair use, there are instances of fair use that people who are doing non-commercial projects or using small amounts of the original work or doing commentary on the original work, that Perplexity is just not going to fall into. If Perplexity used a human to summarize these articles, read them and summarize them, even if they're behind a paywall, you could do that. That is fair use. Yeah. If a human does it, it is not fair use if you do it programmatically with a machine.
Yes.
Fair use means that somebody's giving their opinion, they're transforming the work, and they're making some commentary. So I could literally take the most protected image in the world, whatever it is, whatever it happens to be. Could be like, who protects their IP the most? Disney.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse. I could literally take a Mickey Mouse cartoon, do commentary over it, picture in a picture, and play the entire movie. And if you want proof of this, there's a Star Wars film where a guy does his own video commentary over a Star Wars film. This guy, who was not a fan of the prequels, speaks and talks over the prequels and does it. There's also a group of people who redid the prequels and took like Anakin's whining out and made it a little bit darker. And I think they took episodes 1 and 2 and made it, or maybe they took 1, 2, and 3 and made it into like a 3-hour movie, but took out a lot of the whining and made it more like hardcore. So anyway, long story short, people can do transformative works. This is not that. And if you want an example of a transformative work, it's called Business Insider. Business Insider's entire business was to subscribe to paywalls and to circumvent them. So every story on the information, you can go watch. Topher Grace did this edit, did his edit of the Phantom Menace, the Phantom Edit, yeah.
There you go. Shout out Topher. Well done.
And, you know, if you do it non-commercially and you're not making money, it's transformative, you're making some sort of a statement, you might be able to get away with it. You know, you still could get sued, but, you know, people will have a long-term debate. The thing that's very interesting about fair use cases, they all get settled. So to find a fair use case that got actually to completion is really hard. Okay, let's keep going.
All right, Jason, it's time for an office hours. I'm really excited about this one. We are going to talk to Jiram Taitana from Doctours. Jason, he is the co-founder and CEO. Doctours is in the launch accelerator cohort number 34. And while he comes up here on the screen, I'll just tell you their one simple sentence is that they are a medical tourism marketplace.
Pronounce your name for us one more time so we get it right.
It's Jiram.
Jiram. Oh, G-I-R-U-M. Jiram. Yes, it is actually your name. You don't know this. It's a Greek name. Jiram Tapolis. It means to be wise and hardworking and return huge amounts of tributary to your investors. This is what it means.
That's exactly what we're working for.
Perfect.
I heard you guys were talking about Greek pies before this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jiram, what a great idea. You know I love a good marketplace. Tell us the state of tourism. I know people love to go to Mexico to get breast augmentation, teeth. I don't know if it's a good idea or not. South Korea, amazing destination. Eastern Europe. It seems like cosmetic surgery is becoming people's passion, maybe too much in some cases, maybe too young. Putting it all aside, people want to look good. Okay. No shame in the game, I guess. I've been considering it since I got this Ozempic jowl here. I got to figure out what to do. I need to get a little staple here or something, they tell me. My friends are now, they made fun of me for being fat, and now I'm getting made fun of for having a turkey thing here. I don't know. You tell me, Jiram, what I got to do. But explain to me how big this market is. I want to start with market because you have a marketplace. The market size really does matter. So how many Americans are going and doing this? Where are they going? What are the top treatments?
Yeah, so I'll answer this across the world and then just the US.
Okay.
So if you look at the American market, there's about 1.4 million American medical tourists in 2024. This number is up from 340K pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. So the market is really growing. If you look at the global market, cosmetic surgery is the biggest category of medical travel, like you mentioned. But amongst Americans, it's actually dental. It's dental. Globally, it's cosmetic surgery, dental, followed by fertility treatment, which is very interesting, and a bunch of long-tail procedures down the line. Yeah. If you compare the number of medical tourists to the global elective procedure spend, it's not that big. It's actually a much, much smaller niche. So our vision is how can we dominate this niche and then grow it eventually to compete with the local elective procedure market.
I see on the website, hair transplants are big, huh?
They are. They're growing massively.
So we're to working speak. With,
yeah. So I don't know if you guys have access to our slides or anything. If you look at the Google Trends data, it's just exploding. Specifically in Turkey. If y'all are on TikTok at all, you must have seen
this. I have seen this in Turkey. They make this joke about the airline flights. You see these guys have like... Yeah, their heads bandaged with people exactly. going there. So what does it cost to do that in Turkey versus the U.S.? And then what can people expect in terms of quality?
Let me start with attacking the cost question first. By the way, there's good clinics in the U.S. There's good clinics abroad. There's terrible clinics in the U.S. There's terrible clinics abroad as well. Okay. But if you have a budget of, let's say, $10,000, you're going to the worst clinics in the U.S. You don't want to travel. The same amount of money will get you the top tier doctor, which would be comparable to the top doctor here in the U.S. So holding your cost constant the quality that you get abroad is much, much higher. The second thing is the reason for platforms like DocTours need to be around is to protect the consumers from, you know, going to some basement and getting a treatment that isn't safe for them, right? We verify the clinic. We look at their local certifications, their global certifications, the number of Americans they see every single year, verifiable reviews, et cetera, before listing them to our website so that the American consumer could trust that the quality of care that they're getting is much, much higher.
I was curious, how much work is it to actually go out there and vet these markets yourself as a company? Because I presume there's a lot of them. Do you have to go in person? How do you do the quality control on the recommendation side?
Yeah, so far we've been asking them to submit their certifications. If you look at a country like Turkey, medical tourism is a national level priority for them. So they're quite strict, a lot stricter there than the US is for hair transplant clinics here in the US. So they submit their certifications. We can verify it with the government websites. We also ask them to submit verifiable reviews, which are mostly videos. Our go-to-market is also TikTok. We partner with creators who have done their hair transplant abroad at the clinics we list on our site. So there's very direct proof of the quality available abroad.
Do you remove people from the site if you get complaints? Is there some sort of standard? I'm curious as you grow this, because you're a year one or two startup. I'm not sure how long it's been around.
So we launched in January, so it hasn't even been a year yet.
Got it.
We haven't had any complaints so far. But yeah, we'd definitely take it down if something bad were to happen.
Yeah. So I think that's like the interesting thing is, how do you certify? And do you have multiple levels? Because it seems like you've started with actually hair transplants is the first category. Is there going to be a certification level? Because Airbnb now does like, I forgot the name of it. I'm staying at an Airbnb here. I find myself now.
Superhost. Like,
Superhost, that's the thing, yeah. And then there's One Fine Stay and VRBO. If you want it to pay 20% more and you know it's going to be incredibly great design and managed by a management company, somebody's going to visit you, maybe they pre-stock the fridge, all that kind of good stuff. So do you have that concept in mind for your marketplace?
Yeah, certainly in the future, it's something that we'll have to do. Right now, we just look at their, you know, local certifications, but you can imagine DocTours having a board of surgeons here in the US that come up with standards. And then now we go around our partner clinics and ask them to get certified. And we can give them a special badge similar to the Superhost. And that, you know, given that they follow US standards, this has two benefits. One, you know, it's a guarantee safety for the American consumer, but also it could be a great revenue stream for us as these clinics pay to get these certifications every single year.
One of the most interesting things I've just learned doing a couple of clicks on your website, is that there are eyebrow and beard transplants.
Correct.
Stole my question.
Where's the donor hair coming for? Because my beard does not come in like a beard. It just, like, I have a really thick goatee. It's a mess. It's my Irish and Greek side competing with each other. Like, my Greek side's got this great goatee going and the rest is just patchwork. How does that work?
Yeah, so the typical donor area is the back of your head.
Okay.
And the sides as well. So if you've seen, you know, people that lose their hair, like the top is gone, but you'd still have like the
crown
over here.
Yeah.
At the back and the bottom, it will still be there.
Yeah, you still got
that's
it.
Typically where the hair comes from. And sometimes you can ask your surgeon to take it from your back or your chest hair. A lot of times surgeons will deny that, but it is something you can do.
Wow. Your back hair. I was talking to a number of companies that were in psilocybin, which is the active ingredient in what are called magic mushrooms or mushroom chocolates, is how people typically ingest them at parties now in the United States. But the psilocybin, you can make synthetic psilocybin. I actually think Peter Thiel was an investor in this company. And I was like, why don't you find a country, send doctors, therapists, do it in a very controlled setting, have doctors ready. And that's exactly what started to emerge, which is psychedelic or plant medicine tourism. Have you looked into that, the psychedelic medicine and healing as a potential for DocTours?
So we're trying to stay away from the whole medicine side of things. A lot of investors ask us, will you import medication from abroad and do arbitrage there, et cetera? Like you said, have people travel for psychedelics. It's not something we're thinking about. Our growth plan is really winning in this hair transplant space. Figure out what is the next market, which we think would be IVF. And then launch dental shortly after that.
Got it.
And just stack verticals one at a time.
So IVF is, I've gone through it with my spouse, so I'm
pretty familiar. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. We have two IVF babies.
Amazing.
Infertility.
Very
fun,
expensive,
fun.
Yeah.
Well, as it turns out, in Rhode Island, it's mandatorily covered as part of health insurance, which is a little state perk. Yeah. So for us, it was actually incredibly affordable.
What is it? What do you know? Did you ever look at the bills of what it actually cost your healthcare company to do that?
I don't look at bills. My wife doesn't remember how much
you. Do you remember how much you paid out of pocket?
No.
Or was it zero?
It was some amount of money between zero and 10K. I didn't care.
So just for context, if you were to get IVF done here in the US, it could cost you 30K.
Yep.
If you have insurance, it could come down to 10K. Going to a place like France or Spain, you can get the procedure done for under $5,000.
So that's so
it's
awesome.
An insane.
And that's the first world. We're not talking about emerging markets, frontier markets. I mean, going to France or Spain sounds wonderful. People are going there every summer and going there for spring.
Like, it does feel like there's a lot more to IVF than a hair transplant. So do you think people would leave the country for a much longer period of time to do that kind of care? Because that would raise the price just for living expenses.
Oh, yeah, travel. Yeah.
Well, people are already doing it. It doesn't matter what I think. Will it grow is an interesting question. So you can look at the Google Trends data on this as well. For IVF, it looks similar to what hair transplants did in 2022. So we think it's going to rapidly expand in the next few years.
I was unaware that, 30. Yeah. Oh, you think it's a generational thing? Continue. Yeah.
Well, Gen Z's turning 30. They're expected to be the biggest user of IVF. Social media is how the quality of care abroad is really shared. And they're the most influenced on what they see on social media. So we think 2030, plus or minus 1 year would be great for IVF. So we're probably going to launch that market next.
Any questions for me and challenges you have with the business?
My question for you actually has to do with trust and safety. Mm. You asked this. It's the most commonly asked question from investors as well. And I shared with you what we're doing on the back end to verify clinics and have them on our platform. I'm wondering what you think we should do to better communicate this with our consumers. Today, it's not a huge concern, but as we scale into bigger and bigger markets, I imagine that'll be huge. You famously invested in low trust businesses like Uber in the early days, Robinhood even. Have you seen them grow past this, and what advice do you have for us?
Proactive communication, rating systems, mutual rating systems all played roles in those. Customer support plays a major role. Blog posts back in the day were great ways to communicate complex options. So here, even in this conversation, you and I, I asked you some questions about beards, and you had like these incredible, then I asked you, hey, what about is eventually there going to be gene therapies? You had a great answer. These discussions are not on your website yet, right? Because you're a young startup, and or maybe they are, I guess in your FAQ, you have some of them. So I think, to the extent you can explain these things to where your audience lives, which seems to be TikTok, your Instagram, I would keep working on refining the quality of those. You're in healthcare. I think making them really tight and highly produced, maybe a high quality, here's what a hair transplant is. I'm here at this clinic. Here's three people we interviewed about it. Really getting into it. And then some of those you might be able to put advertising behind and actually convert into customers. I'm assuming you get paid hundreds of dollars per referral, low hundreds of dollars, something in that space, or each transaction's worth low hundreds of dollars. Am I ballpark correct?
It ranges a lot depending on what clinic you go to, but we're aiming $750 per person all the way to $1,500 per person.
Great. So you're getting 10-20% of the procedure, which is pretty common in this kind of space. I think investing, $5,000 or $10,000 in a couple of short videos, really well as an investor in the company, having that highly produced asset that builds trust and, having a way to build that content on a regular basis that takes these questions head on, or finding a great doctor from a couple of clinics and then you having the doctor speak to it, or you interviewing the customer and the doctor and saying, tell me about recovery, the scabbing, the itchiness, highly produced, videos with the actual customers, with the actual people doing that, tours of the facilities, all those things would build trust. And consistency in the brand and the design of the brand does speak volumes as well. So if you look at both Uber and Robinhood, their design, today would be 10 out of 10, right? This is world class design. Their design started not dissimilar to yours. Your design's like a 6 or a 7, you know, in terms of aesthetics. And, you know, if you were to go to 10 designers and say, rate these websites, they probably give you a 6 or a 7 in terms of, you know, 10 being Robinhood. Robinhood came out of the gate at 8.5, 9. They really worked on it. I would, again, as an investor, say, if you told me I want to spend $5,000 with 2 different designers to make our design world-class, invest $10,000 in this and then throw it all away and then spend another $10,000 and do that in a year or 6 months later, and I'm going to drop $20,000 on design, I would say probably a good use. People do judge books by their cover, and really world-class design, although it seems of low importance, Airbnb was another one that was 8.5, 9 out of, maybe a 9 out of design. So this is really an interesting thing. I really appreciate your question. Design equals trust. We can all remember the iterations of Uber. Alex will show you the first landing page for Uber. It's very famous how terrible this landing page was, so much so it's almost like a meme. People share it all the time. And I remember when Travis was showing me like an early version and we were doing like a little product review. I said, you know, I got a question for you about the cab. You know, we're calling this Uber Taxi or Uber Cab. And I was like, you know, Uber Cab is a dumb name because it's not a cab. So can we drop the cab and just call it uber.com? And he said, yeah, we're doing that. I said, can I get credit for that? And he's like, I don't understand. I was like, can you tell the press that I came up with that idea, so when they do the movie, just like Sean said, drop the th, I can get credit for that. And he was like, sure. but we've already made the decision. I was like, I don't care about the decision. I just care about credit because it'd be funny. So here you go. And I'm friends with Sean Parker. On-demand car service via iPhone and SMS. And it showed a cab. And when the cab moved, hopped along the route, as you can see in that image, and it didn't change direction. So when you see it at an intersection, it looks like it's coming towards you off of a 2D map. Like it's going to like jump in the screen and fly into the air straight up. Whereas now it points the direction it's going. Obvious. And I was telling him about that. And he's like, it's my number one piece of feedback. It confuses everybody. Nobody understands it. Da-da-da. I'm like, yeah, but you could just make, how many versions of the car are there? You just have to do an overhead view. It's like, south, north, west, east. And he's like, yeah, but then you have Broadway, which goes on an angle. You got this street, you know. I was like, yeah. So you should just make one version and rotate. It's like, I've had this conversation 5 freaking times, Jake. How can we stop talking about it? This looks like, this is a 5 out of 10 in design. So you're 5? Ahead of Uber.
This is a 1. This is the whatever. Worst thing I've ever seen.
I mean, it communicates what it does. On-demand car service via iPhone and SMS, book car in the app. So the checkbox is in the bullet point, join for free. The call to action is good, or learn more. There is some good stuff here. How it works, pricing, blog. They did think through objectively what people's questions are. And so you can kind of look in the history books, and design equals trust is, something we are going to put in our Founder University and Launch Accelerator curriculum. So somebody make a note about communicating that back to my team, please. I want a design equals trust, and then they can go to this clip in Q&A and maybe build a little curriculum around it. It's a very important. Tell us a little bit about your experience in the program, and we'll wrap.
We did Founder U, I think, for a different idea. I don't remember how long ago.
Oh, really?
And that's how. Yeah. And that's how we learned about Launch. Favorite part is, getting intros to the investors after the pitches every week. It breaks my heart not getting ranked because there are so many great other companies in our cohort. But
competitive.
Y'all have it's very competitive, I think. Y'all have introduced us to some amazing first principle thinkers, investors who want to see what the future of elective procedures and we're thankful for that.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a device we have every week. We ask the investors to say, after they see the presentations, hey, tell us 1, 2, and 3, which was your favorite startup? And then we give 2 points for first place, 1 point for second place, a 0.5 for third place. And then I create another device. Third place and second place, you just say the name of the company. First place, you explain why you picked them for first place. So if you get first place, you get like an effusive couple of sentences from the person who picked you. What this device also does is, hey, you picked us as number 2, was wondering if I could follow up with you and put us in our investor updates.
Yeah.
So it kind of creates a little bit of a connective tissue with some number of investors. Also, you know, if you don't get picked, you know, for 3 weeks in a row, you have to say, well, why are these other companies getting picked? And then you start to, because you're seeing why those people are getting startup investor or product investor or market investor or founder investor fit. And it could be any of those things, right? They just love the founder's presentation ability. And they'll say that. I just love the founder. Wow, so dogged, so funny, so clever, so insightful, great answers. They might just say that, right? You've experienced that, Guillermo, and they just love a founder. Other time, they're like, I love this market. This market's great. It's ripe for disruption. Oh my God. Everybody's going to be doing more medical procedures. They're getting safer. Yeah, I love this market. You can get all those things that occur, but what's most important is the competitive nature of getting into an accelerator. Then I said, well, how do we make the accelerator itself have a little competition in it? Mm-hmm. Just to get people at the top of their game. When you're playing basketball and everybody shoots 35 to 40% from three-point range, or, you know, 80 or 90% from the free throw line, and you don't, you know what you're going to do? You're going to come to the gym an hour early until you do, because you want to make the team. So if your design sucks, your market sucks, your business model sucks, and you see other people solving those problems, you just fix it. That's the great part, I think.
Exactly.
Well, if everyone wants to check out what DocTours is up to, it's doctours.co, and you can take a peek around there. It's quite a lot of stuff on there. It was
great
really
job.
Easy
Where
to
are
prep
you based,
Jerem?
I'm curious. Where are you based?
I'm in Huntsville, Alabama today.
Love it. Yeah, and this is a co-working facility you're in, or just a fancy background?
This is the ground floor of our apartment building.
Oh, wow. They have like a co-working space? Sweet.
They have a co-working space, yeah.
Awesome, yeah. And fundraising, you're getting good feedback from investors, yeah? They have a, when they give you like really considered feedback, any consistent feedback you're getting, or feedback that you know is like, they're just afraid to say, I don't want to invest in this business. I'm just going to give you like a BS reason. And have you been able, have you learned to parse those things?
Yeah, the liability question is definitely number one. We've gotten some feedback from the launch team, but also other investors to, you know, have the legal side be very robust and make sure that we're legally protected. I think that's what investors care a lot about.
I just want to pause you on that. We have an investment in Gigster and MeowTao, Stone Algo. These are three very different marketplaces. Cat sitting, diamonds, Gigster figured out insurance in a major way. So if you want to meet Yuri and the team over there, just ask Jackie or Bianca to introduce you to Gigster. And then I think MeowTel got their insurance for cat sitting. That's a really interesting thing. You could say to the person who's doing the tourism, would you like to get insurance in case your trip gets postponed or canceled? That insurance exists in the world. I get upselled on it all the time.
Yep.
I never take it, but I should think about it. And then there's insurance, you know, for the other side, which I'm sure they have, but they could get it for Americans. And if you said to them, hey, we want you to pay $100 insurance, you know, as part of the SPIF or whatever, or the affiliate, if people ask for it, will you underwrite it? If that's like the thing that is the deciding factor for them. What's that?
If you're in Turkey, it's required. The government requires clinics to have insurance for their foreigner patients.
Interesting.
But yeah, this isn't true for Mexico or I'm not exactly sure about South Korea, but it is something that we could offer both sides.
I think you could become a blogging machine. And I think if you just spoke into a computer with somebody interviewing you, and then you had somebody who's a good writer write blog posts based on what you're saying and then put citations into it, you could start with just, you have an FAQ, but a blog about this, and then put it on Substack, put it on Beehive, put it on LinkedIn, and then you make slightly different versions of it for different platforms. Now you're getting multiple swings at bat in the SEO/large language model. So that one is like, tell me about the insurance. Do hair, you know, hair transplant insurance, you know, Mexico versus whatever. Or a landing page for hair transplants or dental implants, Mexico versus Turkey, Turkey versus France, France versus Spain, what to expect, et cetera. What you'll see is in the SaaS companies, the savvy SaaS companies will make Salesforce versus HubSpot, HubSpot versus Salesforce. It's very interesting. On the Salesforce web landing page or whatever, Salesforce wins in their estimation. On the HubSpot landing page, they'll go back and forth and have this really objective like shootout between the two products. Miraculously, HubSpot wins. AngelList did an incredible job of this. I send people, even though I have the syndicate, I just send people to AngelList. They got ahead of us. They wrote all this incredible FAQs about angel investing, QSBS. They took the risk of saying, hey, we're going to just put that information out there. Other people would be like, oh, don't give financial advice. Don't give advice on this. Don't give advice on that. They like just like, screw it. We're giving advice. We're going to just explain this stuff to you. Investopedia does a good job at that. So
great job.
Yeah, I would look at those two sites or those couple of sites as inspiration. And it could be very lightweight for you to hire a writer to do this. Like it might be $100 per page. You get interviewed by them over a Zoom or you just talk into a microphone. They make the pages. You read them, approve them, read them, approve them, read them, approve them. Boom.
Totally.
All right. Another amazing office hours. I can't wait to see you in Texas. We're going to do some sort of Texas thing. You like barbecue? Don't tell me you're a vegan.
I love
please.
Barbecue.
You like no, barbecue?
Don't tell me you're a barbecue. Vegan.
Great job, doctors. Is it .com or .us, .ai?
It's .co. We're working on the .com.
I mean, it's a good name. Doctors, I like it. It's very clever. I wouldn't worry about it. You could get doctors or go doctors.com as blockers. Then when you negotiate with doctors.com, you could say, listen, we don't need it. We've already invested the SEO in this. But if we could get it, it's nice, obviously. So we'd give you this dollar amount. And that actually becomes true, right? Because the truth is like a great .com does build trust. Uber went from UberCab to Uber.com and they bought that for a couple million bucks. Yeah, good luck with it. And I'm really excited. I think you're going to have an amazing business. Going to cash flow great and great questions today.
Awesome. Thank you. It was
all right. We'll drop you off and anything else in our docket that we need to get to here? Any housekeeping, any Founder University stuff, any dates we have to promote?
No,
allin.com summit, all in summit, September, allin.com/yada yada yada. Or you just do allin.com and just click on events. But I like to say allin.com/yada yada yada. It actually, I think, redirects to the All In Summit. This week in startups.com/docket and cautious optimism on Substack. And I'm like Calacanis, I think, .substack.com. Go sign up for email newsletters. I'm going to start writing again. I decided I got to unleash my superpower, which is writing, and get back in the writing game. I'm so jealous of you writing every day. We'll talk to you. He's Alex. What is he? He's Alex Wilhelm. So that means on Twitter, X, he might be x.com/Alex.
Yes, sir.
Ridiculous. I'm x.com/Jason. Equally ridiculous. And now my Instagram is @Jason. So go over there if you want to get cheesecake photos of me. I'm starting to do these. I take pictures of myself like with a sultry look and then I send them to my wife, like me sipping a cup of coffee. I'm like, I do this. A little cute eyebrow up. And then I send it to her and you know what I say?
What?
You're welcome. You're welcome. I love that. Was that Moana that had the song You're Welcome?
Yes. Yeah, it's sung by The Rock. If I did that to my wife to know she was...
I love that song. It's so great. It's the worst, like most crazy thing in the world. All right, everybody. We didn't do the Tesla story. Lightning round it for me.
Yep. Invites are out for the Tesla launch in Austin. This is their robotaxi event.
Yes.
I believe they're still shooting for the 22nd. It's going to be a geo-fenced area with 10 cars to start. There's going to be remote safety people, which you and I both think is a great way to kick off the overall push. And as far as I can tell from social media, Jason, they are inviting Tesla-friendly influencers to be among the first people. And that's smart because that'll ensure there'll be TikToks, Instagrams, and otherwise tweets
amazing
about what people are doing. So I'm stoked. I want more competition in self-driving. I want Waymo to be scared and in a hurry. So I can't wait and I hope it goes well.
Yeah, it's going to go well. I got to ride in one of them with the cyber taxi, robo taxi, as I said, on Saturday in Palo Alto. Did 3 rides, all flawless. Nice. It's a bit more aggressive than the version I have is my perception. That may be just me projecting into it, but I actually sat in the driver's seat. And I think they're ready to slowly do testing with a safety driver. Now, the safety driver in this instance is going to be in the right-hand seat. I saw a screenshot. So when you do it, you can bring an extra person with you according to, there was somebody had tweeted like the, somebody tweeted all like the details. It's geofenced. It's 6 a.m. to midnight. Mm-hmm. If it's inclement weather, they're turning it off. And there's a safety driver in the right passenger seat, front right passenger seat. So you can take the 2 back seats. You can bring one person with you. If they're 18 years old, you can do social media. the person in the right, I saw an interface. Somebody had screenshotted it. There's two big buttons, pull over and stop. So the safety monitor, which is not a safety driver because they're not able to take over the steering wheel, can press one of two buttons. I think this is halfway to what I think they should do. I think they should have just put a safety driver in, just called it a day.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they feel confident. And there is a big self-correcting mechanism here. If they get in an accident,
yeah,
they got big problems. And then I also saw that the state, I don't know if you saw this, the state had sent a letter to Tesla. Did you see this?
I saw headlines about that as I was prepping the show, but yeah. Please.
So the state sent a letter like, hey, we have some rules here. We need you to, dial this in. So lest anybody think that there are not self-correcting mechanisms here for the self-driving companies, there are. And there was a Volkswagen ID Buzz. Pull up that headline if you don't mind.
Well, no worries.
Take your time, but I just want to give people the full context of what's going on here. So as you can see there, it's obviously geofenced massively. The Tesla bears are like, oh, didn't you say you can do it anywhere? Of course you can do it anywhere. Supervised FSD can work anywhere. Unsupervised FSD cannot. So of course they're going to, now that doesn't mean they can't quickly learn. They will quickly learn because it's a neural net. It's designed to simulate off of hundreds of millions of hours they've collected.
Oh yeah.
But it's geofenced and there's a terms of service and all that other stuff. This is not like Waymo, which is ahead of them obviously in terms of deployment. This is like kind of Waymo. This is somewhere between Waymo having a safety driver in the driver's seat and only doing Google and Alphabet passengers.
Yeah.
And, Waymo public. So it's just kind of right in between those. Seems very wise. And then here's the Volkswagen headline. So Volkswagen has its own self-driving group. It's called Moya, M-O-I-A. It's been pretty stealthy. Like they don't really talk too much, but they're doing really consequential work. Zoox is also doing very consequential work in larger size vehicles.
Yes.
That the ID Buzz is an incredible car. It opens on both sides. So this is going to be good for the Uber pool Lyft line concept. I still believe 5 people will be up. If I had to take a guess, I think there'll be 5 operators in a major city in New York. In a major city in the US, 5 operators of robo-taxis within 2 years in one city. Over under, what do you got? You obviously have Waymo in Austin already.
Yep.
Or imminently. Let's just assume Tesla figures out and next year, Q1, Q2, they open it up to people. So that would be 2. So 3 more got to be added. I would put Zoox.
The Volkswagen.
Volkswagen ID Buzz, and then probably one other.
WeRide from China or Pony.ai. I'm bad at sports betting, so I want to be more aggressive than your timeline. Does that mean I'm taking the over or the under?
Under. So you
I'm
mean
taking the under?
There'll be 5 in under 24. I'll take the over. I think it's under 2, but maybe I set the line to. So if I set 18 months, would you be under 18 months or above 18 months?
That's kind of where my equilibrium point is. So for the sake of being spicy, I'll say under, but that's probably.
Okay, I'll take over on 18. That's it.
Okay.
Let's set a date in the Notion to check back. And then anytime we see a city hit 3 unique providers, we do that. I got a inside piece of information from China on self-driving.
Oh, hit me.
And job destruction. We didn't talk about the Andy Jassy letter, which you can pull up. The Andy Jassy letter was pretty interesting for me. And I saw Andy Jassy at the Coatue conference. I got to ask him a question or two. Mm-hmm. In China, I was talking to a major CEO, founder from China. This is the message from Andy Jassy about generative AI and its impact and that they're going to have less employees because of AI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the white collar side of the business. But I asked him about self-driving, Zoox, delivery drones, et cetera. I think the most impacted company by AI in the world is going to be Amazon.
Positive or negative?
Positive in that it's going to make their earnings go crazy.
Yes.
Negative for society in that they're going to hemorrhage delivery jobs and factory jobs and white collar jobs.
Yes.
They're going to up and down the stack, decrease their staff size by 5% a year for 5 years, which net compounding means they'll have 35% less people in the company, something in that range. It's gonna be a third smaller, or a third of the jobs are gonna go away inside of Amazon in 5 years. Now, do they add jobs for other opportunistic things? It's possible, but I think of the current job mix, I could see a third going away because of these technologies. In China, there's deep concern inside the party, government, about jobs. Young men work as drivers.
Yes.
Young men unemployed ride in the streets. We saw this in Greece. We saw it in Italy. We see it in the Middle East from time to time.
Yeah.
Whenever the number of young men, 18 to 30 years old, mm-hmm. unemployment hits about 15, 20%, you get a little bit of uprising. If it goes above 20%, you get riots in the street. You can look mm-hmm. at Greece, employment riots, Spain employment riots, and other countries, Middle East, I think maybe Lebanon, Egypt would be another one. I think Egypt, in that demographic, there's a lot of unemployment. And then those people have no time, have free time, and then they can become radicalized.
Right. And what does the Chinese Communist Party really value above all, which is political stability and maintenance of control? Harmony, sure. And so I think, and I'm showing a news article here showing that this is back from February, so the data is a little bit old here, Jason, but youth unemployment in China rose to about 17%.
Holy cow, what a pull. That's shocking.
Yeah, it's really high. It's much higher than the overall rate of unemployment in the country. But a problem that China has is simply that its economy cannot absorb the number of highly qualified college graduates that it produces. And so they have a surplus. And so if we're talking about white-collar job destruction being a problem here in the U.S., well, it's going to be twice
India
the stuff over there.
India is another situation where they're taking full villages in India and transplanting them to Singapore, Dubai, Qatar, et cetera, for healthcare work, nurses, doctors, construction, et cetera, restaurants. So they'll go to a village where there's no jobs and everybody's unemployed in India. And they're like, hey, here's an opportunity. So when there's displacement like this, there's opportunity, there's cognitive and, atom and bit-based moving surplus of energy. You can take this energy and use it. Athena's using it, right? Mm-hmm. Taking assistance, go to athenawow.com and get like a month or a couple of weeks off. I'm the first investor in that company and a partner. And so they're shipping $3,000 a month assistance, $36,000 a year, all in. No extra health benefits taxes, hiring. They'll just swap them in and out and you get an assistant for half the price of the United States. Who really wants a job, who will work harder than anybody in the United States ever would, or 90% of Americans ever would. And they call you sir, it's quite charming. Anything else I can do for you? It's like really service-based. There's an opportunity.
Yeah.
There's an opportunity there. Those folks in China who can't get jobs, what can the Chinese government use them for? Where could they be deployed? And every time you see that, and I think, that's the thing I've been thinking about with job displacement in the U.S., and somebody challenged me on it. I think it was Sachs at this COTU conference or whatever. And I said, well, what if we just double the number of teachers, doctors, nurses, and people who do elder care?
Yeah.
What if like all these, you take those 16% who are unemployed and you could say you now all work at nursing homes and your job is to watch TV with them, take them on walks, do a cooking class.
Yeah.
Basically be a camp counselor. It's a camp counseling job. Let's call it what it is. These people have nothing to do. They're retired, just like kids have nothing to do in the summer. You're a camp counselor. Keep them busy. Make it fun. The end. So this is what I want founders to start thinking about. If there were 10,000 DoorDashers available to do something else, what would you have them do?
Oh, interesting. So how to get ahead of the freed up labor force of people that are currently...
What could 10,000 DoorDashers do if it's not bringing you boba?
They can make me boba and sushi. I'm just kidding.
They could, it's an honest question. And so is there a handyman job? Is there a butler job? I know this sounds crazy.
No.
Do you want to start a community garden? Dog walking? There are other things that in society, maybe rich people do.
Uh-huh.
Chefs, personal chef. Rich people have personal chefs. Poor people like eat fast food and don't cook. And, then there's everything in between. What if there was somebody, who has one of these cooking marketplaces and they say, hey, we're going to teach people to cook. They're going to cook a meal for 10 families And those 10 families come and pick up from this community kitchen their 10 meals at a really reasonable price. It doesn't get delivered to them. They have to pick it up on the way home from work. But they get a healthy dinner, leftovers for and then a brown bag lunch and a breakfast for the next day for, you know, $12 a person. And it's healthy and it's great. And they buy it for subscription. So start thinking like that. The businesses that didn't have employees or couldn't get employees, what if there were too many employees and people were saying, yeah, I'll work for anything. That's what happened with Uber and DoorDash. There was a surplus of people who wanted to do gig work. Yes. I predict millions to tens of millions of gig workers coming on the market.
Man, that is at once an incredibly exciting point and also a very scary one. I think I'm going to take the optimistic side of it, but we have a lot of work to do to rebalance the economy in a post ChatGPT world.
Never squander a crisis.
Chaos.
That's capitalism, is a ladder.
Chaos is a ladder, yeah.
All right, everybody, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.